Happy Wednesday, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, your host every week from noon to one on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And you know what? Man, we are so proud to bring Alpha Women Speak. We have a whole group of beautiful, talented, extraordinary women here in the studio at KKFI. We have artists and performers, writers, Kat Husk, Annie Cherry, Natasha Ria Elscari, Bernadette Esperanza Torres, and Ari Fish. They're going to join us to discuss the role of women artists in Kansas City, and they're going to spend the whole hour with you, with us, and we know you're going to enjoy this entire segment of Art Speak Radio. So, you know, I'm going to start off saying hello to Kat, Annie, Natasha, Bernadette, and Ari. Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Snaps, yes. We are animated, I promise.
Oh, my God. My goodness. And so if you come up to the microphone, I can hear you a little better. So what we're going to do is I'm going to go around to each woman and ask them to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit how you got into the creative field, what was your spark, and where you're at. And, yeah, so let's start with Annie Cherry. Welcome, friend.
Hi. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh, this is going to be great.
So my name is Annie Cherry. I'm an award-winning performing artist specializing in burlesque performance art and clowning. I work here in Kansas City a lot with Bohemian Cult Revival and Late Night Theater. And I'm also the co-proprietrix of the Pearl Theater with my partner in crime, Katie Gilchrist.
I
started out as a visual artist, and then once I was in my early 20s, I started performing. And here we are.
Was there
15
anyone
years later?
Was there anyone on stage or that you saw that inspired your decision to perform live in front of audiences?
Oh, well, locally, Late Night Theater was a huge influence
yeah.
on me.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Terrific. And the next we have Kat Husk.
Hi.
Hello, friend.
I'm Catherine Husk, and I'm a fine art conceptual photographer and painter, and I've been doing that since I could basically pick up a paintbrush, and all of my work is about my just being disabled and queer, and I use either non-binary or femme forms to talk about those experiences.
And have you always been an artist? I mean, as a young child, were you always creating, making, drawing?
Oh, yeah. That was right. Basically every yeah. day was always, you know, coming up to my parents like, look, this latest thing I did.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Terrific. Then we have Bernadette Torres. Bernadette Esperanza Torres. Yes.
Well, thank you
Honey,
so
come
much.
Come up to the microphone. Yeah.
I like to
closer,
thank you.
Closer.
Oh, closer. Great.
Closer.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Maria.
You bet.
Thank
you
for KFI for inviting me. I am a full-time instructor at the Metropolitan Community College. I teach fine art, ceramics, and drawing. I'm also the gallery director of the Carter Art Center Gallery, and I've been doing that professionally for the last 16 years now. I also do my own artwork, ceramics, mm-hmm. Figurative, and a lot of my stuff is autobiographical in nature. I grew up in a flower shop. I've been doing artwork since third grade. I was artist teacher and assistant at the community center. So working through my art teachers being my family, and that's pretty much brought me to Kansas City from Florida.
Yeah.
And being in the arts in every realm, helping young artists, helping professional artists being the best that they can be.
Yeah, because I know that I met you just a few years back at the Art Institute, and you were in ceramics then, but
yes.
You ended up with a painting degree? Or
no, ceramics.
Ceramics, okay.
Yeah, through the master's degree, it went back to Florida, University of Miami, and then came back. I married my friend that I met at the Art Institute. So really, the arts have helped me through my whole entire life, mm-hmm. through life and living, and every opportunity I've ever had is through the arts.
Terrific. And I'm going to steal that necklace before you leave, by the way. She's wearing this beautiful ceramic necklace that she created. So
thank you.
Yeah, you can leave that at the door. Hello, Ari Fish. Come on up to the microphone.
Okay, I am Ari Fish, and here's my spiel. I'm a visual artist here in Kansas City, and I also am a mother. And can you hear me? Check one.
There you go. Okay.
I'm also a mother of two beautiful little girls. Yeah, and I am an advisor at the Kansas City Art Institute. So I think, above all, I think, you know, my biggest practice is, of course, yeah, visual art, but I really, really enjoy working with students at the Kansas City Art Institute and helping them achieve their dreams and kind of guiding them as much as I can. Bernadette and I have some overlap because we both graduated from the ceramics department at the Art Institute, but we were joking just now that I don't do ceramics, but she does. But, you know, you go through that program and you can kind of leave doing anything you want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my biggest passion is being an advocate and an ally for these artists coming up and graduating and helping them to achieve their dreams. So
beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. Great. And thanks for having me, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. All of you, this is like a dream team. So thank you for saying yes to me. Last but not least, Natasha Ria Ascari, a poet, writer, and she's going to introduce herself and give us a little backstory. So
hey, everybody. My name is Natasha Ria Ascari. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. And I have been a writer. I'm a writer, a poet, performer. I own an art gallery and the founder of Black Space Black Art as well. So I started, I think I just have always lived my life as a writer. My mother did an amazing job of providing space and silence and security, which are all the things that artists, I think, need to initially create, and freedom. And so I had those things, and they were encouraged by the women and men in my family, particularly the women. And it was something that I thought everybody did. And then as I got a little bit older in high school, I realized, oh, this is, might be something that's kind of groovy. So I gigged through college with the Kevin Green Jazz Combo featuring Spoken Word by Natasha Ria Ascari. I was a member of the Black Poets Collective, and I have two books, three CDs, one DVD, and I'm wrapping up my novel in a third collection of poetry, which will hopefully be out this year so that I can spend time on the play that I'm working on in another collection. So I think that's, oh, and I am the mother of two amazing human beings. I am, my son is 19 and my daughter will be 15 next month.
Man, that's crazy how
that
happened.
Isn't that crazy? I know.
Yeah. Well, thank you all. So next week, we'll return with Art Speak Radio. No, I'm just kidding. We have the entire hour. We'll spend this entire hour sharing stories of empowerment, loss, triumph, disappointment, motherhood, family, male versus male. And I don't mean in a mean way, you know. Right? They're all looking at me like, of course, you know, we're going to discuss barriers, creative space, the recognition, and so much more during the show. Plus, we're going to discover what it takes to attain and maintain a place in the arts community. So, yeah, I'm very excited that everyone's tuned in or listening online. So let's get started. And we can just do this round robin. I'm going to throw this question out, and whoever wants to answer it, and then we'll just keep this going, just make it really fluid and organic. So the first question that I have, and I'm just going to say, do you all feel that women are less recognized in the art world than men? And by that I mean, like, less recognized with awards or tenure or talent, publications. What do you think? What are your thoughts? What's been your experience? And yeah, get real close to the microphone because we want to hear what you have to say.
I'll take that one because it's a really loaded question, because you're looking at, I think it's a little bit too broad to just say women, because if you look at, oh, well, there has been more recognition recently of cisgendered women and able-bodied women and white women, but there really hasn't been, there's still underrepresentation of women of color and trans women and disabled women within the arts community. So it definitely, you know, it appears that women are getting more recognition, but if you actually look at who's getting recognized, you're really only looking at white able-bodied women.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's the message that those women, how what is the platform of the women that are being recognized too? So in addition to the recognition of women, what is the agenda that they're pushing? What are they talking about? What are they grappling with? If they are adhering to the patriarchal standards that are already in place and just kind of celebrating more of those tropes for women, or are they really pushing an authentic, no, I won't say it's authentic, but or more authentic, but pushing a different or a more marginalized voice too. I know in writing in particular, you know, they recently did this big study, and, you know, I always say unless 50% are represented either way, right, unless we are actually, you know, statistically represented, then we are not actually represented. So if, you know, if we make up, if African-American women make up, you know, 25% of the population, I'm just throwing out a number, then that should be represented in awards. Does that make sense?
Yes, and exactly,
I feel like those are things that we should achieve. If, you know, if you look at the long line of Pulitzer Prize winners or the long line of presidents of the United States, you know, we've had 44 and we have zero women. Well, we make up 50% of the nation. So we should be represented in that way. And I, and so I would say, yes, every time a woman achieves something, that's awesome. But that does not necessarily mean that the work is done and we get to go, oh, okay, well, so-and-so won. Because that's the same conversation we had when Obama became president. Well, you have a black president now, so racism is over. Yeah. It's like, no, it's not. Yeah. So I think we have to be careful with that same conversation when we have when women are recognized for significant or large awards as well.
It's kind of like an equality versus, it's kind of like an equality versus equity, you know, in that realm. But,
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, you just need to get really close up.
I think, I agree with Natasha and Kat for sure. I think that Kansas City has a really, they do a pretty good job of kind of surveying, you know, what's going where, who's getting what for the most part. I mean, if you look at these organizations and kind of the inside of it, but I also think that there are issues with how they're getting word out of these awards, word out of these exhibition opportunities, who they're reaching to, what their audiences are. Are they, is it an echo chamber? Is, you know, if we're just specifically talking about Kansas City, now nationally, we know that it's really bad. I mean, just on a national level. But yeah, is echo chamber hurting us? And I think a little bit, yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're looking at, you know, a lot of the times these events are held in inaccessible spaces. And so you're looking at taking large swaths of different marginalized groups completely out of the equation when it's not accessible.
Or times. The time that the exhibits happen may not be not be the right time for people to get all their work done. Because as a woman, sometimes other activities of domesticity is why?
And we talked about that in the green room prior to going on air. And, you know, that's something that I want you to follow up with, Bernadette, because I know as an educator, and I know many of you have been educators or continuing, you know, to teach, that's something that you've been really aware of, the different roles that, that women artists have, not only as creating art and making art, but also jobs and children and family life. So
it is a big thing as far as an educator and being an educator for so long. People just think you're just a teacher. I'm here to teach, but that's not solely all I am. They're like, oh, you're an artist too, which is a very strange thing. When a student asks me, well, what do you do? I'm like, art, of course. And they're like, oh, you do art. And that's kind of hard because other artists sometimes look at a teacher as we're here all for you to give everything to you. But at the same time, they feel that you're being selfish. When I say class is over, I'm working on my own artwork, and time is up. And they, you know, it's kind of like if you're still in their sight, students, they think it's still, you know, you're still on. You should give it to me. And I was like, sometimes you have, for me personally, I don't have children, but at the same time, I like to leave that when the time ends. And then I need to fulfill my life with taking my summers off. Like, people think, oh, it's a luxury. I'm like, no, I don't get paid. I choose to not get paid to have the freedom. But I become a better teacher when I go back to school because I fulfilled myself with my creativity.
Yeah. And Annie?
I definitely find that to be a huge challenge, is taking time for oneself and one's own art as a mother and an educator and a venue proprietor. It's very difficult to carve out some time where you're not working. I've actually found myself sending emails from the bathtub recently, and there, you know, we need to draw a line there, like that we all need personal time and personal space in order to generate our own work.
Well, isn't that also tied to the idea that women's labor is tied to everyone else too? The idea that you may not be accessible because you're creating is really a difficult thing for people to accept, even people that claim to support you, right? I mean, it's just because sexism is so systemic that people don't realize they are actually participating in it. And so, and I was commenting, like, the other day, my son reached out to me and he was like, hey, I really need to talk to you. And I was like, I'm actually unavailable for the next 2 hours. And it was like this great pause. He gets it, but it was like, okay, you know, and even that, and I mean, and this is a child who has been raised with an artist, knows, like, when mom is in the blue fuzzy robe, shut it down, don't talk to her, just bring tea, you know. But at the same time, it's like this idea that I find myself working around the clock, answering emails, creating emails. And then I was talking to a friend recently and I said, hey, I have got to put my books at the top of my to-do list every day. It has to be the first, not the last thing I do. And I think that when I don't find my male friends that are artists and even fathers grappling with that to the degree that women artists are, and when women artists are mothers, it's a different load that we carry as an artist, right? And so I just think, and I was telling also a friend, I'm 42 years old. I mean, I've been an artist my whole life. I still have to remind myself, and I still have to fight for my own time, even from myself. Even in the knowing, as a woman, that I have to do this, I still have to say, hey, work on your stuff, and don't worry about other people's stuff right now. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I had a friend recently say, how can I help you with your next project? I was in the weeds with this project, and I said, you can do my dishes. I mean, to be perfectly frank, like, that's the kind of material support that is needed sometimes.
Yeah. And Ari?
Oh, yeah, I was going to pull it up. Quote Marina Abramović, who was like, someone asked her in an interview, do you think that there are any good parents that are artists? And she's like, yeah, they're called fathers. And I was like, whoa! But her, I mean, her standpoint is very valid. I mean, that's what she, you know, that's what she saw, and she purposely chose not to have children. I remember crying, I mean, just sobbing with the father, Aiko's father, my oldest, and I was on that threshold. I was probably 7 months pregnant, and I was, and he was like, what's wrong? I said, I don't want to be just a mom, you know, and he's like, he didn't understand it. I didn't understand it, obviously, either. Not until I held her in my arms did I really get it. Like, she is my world. My daughters are my world first and foremost. But crossing that threshold into motherhood, to parenthood, made me realize, like, if I'm pursuing my passion, if they see me pursuing my dreams, that's what I want to teach them, that they can be a mother. That's their choice, and they should be following their dreams as well. So it also changed parenthood, motherhood changed me in a way that all of my work is kid-friendly. It's all, you know, can be accessed by a 2-year-old, you know, or a 120-year-old, and in a way that they can enjoy it, and, you know, aesthetically.
Oh, I was going to say, I actually went the complete opposite route, that my work became even less kid-friendly after I had my daughter. And that's, and I think it was because people already didn't take me seriously as an artist even before I became
a mother. And that was because there's this presumption when you're a disabled person that you somehow, if you're disabled and an artist, you do it for art therapy, or they assume that you are intellectually disabled. And so they kind of pat you on the head and speak very condescendingly to you. And so your work is never taken seriously. And so after I had my daughter, there was this added, oh, well, I actually had a person that was a part of a major group here locally ask me if I had ever even worked outside the home before.
Wow.
Yeah. So I make a point that I'm going to make the art that I want to make, and if it's not kid-friendly, it's not going to be kid-friendly.
Yeah. I am probably the least kid-friendly poet. There is.
I can attest to that. But we love you for it.
And I agree. Like, I had to keep the voice that was my voice outside of the role. And when I tell you all, we call it strapping your babies to your back. That's what I did. Yes. My kids were at performances with me when I worked a traditional employment at UMKC for 12 years. They traveled with me. They did things. I was like, I am their mother.
Yeah.
And my mother is an enormous help to me. Like, she is the one who, of course, it's kind of not without that mother guilt. Like, well, why does your house look like this? And I'm like, I'm creating. Mm-hmm. So, and I actually had to come to the space where I realized I cannot create and keep up Martha Stewart's standard at the same time. Something gives. And for me, it's usually the chores, because they wait. The creation doesn't always wait. Like, it's often a portal and it's a window. But, you know, my children are familiar with my erotic poetry, and they're, and I just couldn't give that up. I was like, you know what? You all get everything, including my toilet time. Yeah. I am never without you. You know, I am never without you. So the least that I can do is to be true to my voice. But I also think when I was writing and creating, I thought about my children. Like, I realized I didn't have a lot of poems for boys. And I sat down with my son, and I'm like, hey, you know I love you, right? But I don't know why I don't have poems for boys the way I do for girls or for women. Yeah. And he's like, Mom, I understand. So even just the idea of, like, that our art somehow has to be a reflection of our mothering, too. And if it's not, are we a good mom or are we a bad? Are you a better mom because you said no? Are you a better mom because you said yes? It's like, we have to grapple with all of that as well. And I think that is really frustrating.
Yeah.
It's particularly if you're also, like, a sex and sex positive performer, then it's like, aren't you somebody's mother? And I'm like, how did every child get here? Like, why am I missing?
Immaculate conception.
Wait, I'm like, yeah, they actually come from women who give birth.
I got that child and a happy meal. We're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to be back with ArtSpeak Radio. And you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, your host, here every week on 90.1 FM. KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I want to mention that song that I just played for you. La Santa Cecilia is the artist, and she will be performing July 10th at the Granada in Lawrence, Kansas. And as I was telling my guests, Kat Husk, Annie Cherry, Natasha Ria Elscari, Bernadette Esperanza Torres, and Mary Fish, I was telling them that in this short animated film that was created by La Santa Cecilia, she sings the song Strawberry Fields Forever, the story really is about the migrant farm workers. So it starts out with the dessert with strawberries being served at someone's home, and then it kind of traces back to how those strawberries were brought to the table through migrant farmers. And so I just wanted to make you aware of that, you know, we're very political as well, you know, as women artists. So we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after these messages. And we're back. This is ArtSpeak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, and I have a group of highly talented, intelligent women here in the studio with me today. Kat Husk, Annie Cherry, Natasha Ria Elscari, Bernadette Esperanza Torres, and Ari Fish. Welcome back, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Woo! Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
there's our audience.
You know, there was a really great discussion during the sort of underwriting that I had to air, but I wanted to go back to Annie Cherry because I know you wanted to make a statement or a point before we went to all this business, so...
Saying that a lot of times we're asked how our work affects our children or how our children have received our work or if we're worried about that. And I don't recall that question ever being asked of a man. To my knowledge. it actually, see, we're laughing because it sounds kind of absurd to ask an artist that, right?
How do you balance it all, sir?
Right. I don't think that's a thing that happens.
I'll just say my wife.
Exactly.
I know when I first started out doing burlesque, I actually didn't start performing on stage until after my son was born. And I got a lot of questions when he was little of, oh, well, what is he going to think when he grows up? And he's 15. He's a wonderful kid. And he is proud of me.
Yeah. I mean, why is there such a moral, you know, sort of judgment attached to that? I don't get it.
Or the opposite side, I just realized I'm the only one here on this panel without children, and being asked, well, do you have children? No. Why not? Even my students, like, do you have children? The office lady at the post office, how many children do you have? Like, it's assumed I have children. And I tell them no, and then I kind of feel guilty that I said no, and they're like, why not? And then it goes on. But I realize my place is to pick up where the parents are finishing. Because when I get them in junior college, they have just finished their parents. And when I talk to them, at first they don't realize that I'm actually older than their parents. Don't tell them. But they're like, you're so cool, you're so this. And then they just realize, oh, my mom said the exact same thing. And I said, well, why didn't you listen to her? And it's like, oh, but you're so cool, you're so this. And I said, so I realize when I have to step back and not just say no. I go, yes, I do. I have 70-something kids that I'm still educating them and teaching them to that next level. Basically, I'm the backup to keep them further into the next step to adulthood.
Great. You know, as I want to mention to our listeners, if you just tuned in, we're talking with Kat Husk, Annie Cherry, Natasha Rhea Elscari, Bernadette Esperanza Torres, and Ari Fish. I'm calling this Alpha Women Speak, and we're spending this entire hour sharing stories of empowerment, loss, triumph, disappointment, motherhood, family, male versus female, barriers, creative space, recognition, and so much more. And we also are going to talk about how what it takes to attain and maintain a place in the arts community. One of the songs that I played at the break that I felt was real important to this show was a song by Santa Cecilia, Strawberry Fields, the Beatles tune, and it's very much politicized in an animated short that she's created. My question to each of you is, how does the current political climate affect your work?
Oh, greatly. especially, you know, being a disabled queer person that, you know, with there's threats right now to the ADA, and basically, you know, there's this constant feel like that people don't want disabled people around anymore, so I feel like my voice has to be louder, and that, you know, I've been told through Twitter, I've been told in person that so many times that, why are you even out here? They should have killed all the disabled people, and that, you know, there's just so much rampant ableism. And so I feel like I have to say something, that it has to be political, that who I am is political. I can't remove that from my being, that, you know, my identities are inherently political.
Because that surfaces in your photographs, right, Kat?
Exactly. Yeah, that I use, you know, a lot of nudity in my work, and I use that to basically symbolize sexuality. And that disabled people can be sexual, just like there is a spectrum of sexuality within the able-bodied world, there is a spectrum of sexuality within the disability world. And that I can't remove that from who I am. And so I want to bring awareness. Everybody kind of assumes disabled people are childlike or asexual. And that's just not the case.
Wow.
And there's so little education, I think, about it. And I feel like for my work, it's always been political. I am not as swift as I used to be in my response because I just need more time to think about it. I create mm-hmm. differently. Mm-hmm. And but I try to live a life of political awareness, astuteness, and to be a voice, and to be an ally, and to also make sure that I am always thinking about or learning about these different communities that are marginalized. Mm-hmm. So that has just been my life's work. So I don't feel any more or less charged, as more as I am just more annoyed and angry. Mm-hmm. And possibly a little more terrified. But even that is a decision that I think as a marginalized person, as a descendant of enslaved people, you just have to make the decision to live free, because it is not something that is ever handed to you. At every turn, you are asked to live less of who you are, whether that be woman, whether that be dark skin, whether that be natural, whether that be black, whether that, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. You know, when I first decided to open the gallery, people were like, who do you think you are? You're a writer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you don't actually get to tell me that what it was is not about me opening the gallery. It was about me. About a woman of color saying, I'm tired of only seeing white folks at our shows. Mm-hmm. And we need to have a place for artists of colors, or for people who haven't gone to art school, or people who don't know anything about the hoity-toityness of the art community, to still have a space to show their art.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that is also welcome to people who have had that experience. Because that to not have that division, to have, because oneness is not sameness. It's okay for people who have a MFA to show with someone who is a street artist. I think mm-hmm, that is mm-hmm. a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not the opposite. And so yeah. people were angry about that. Because it was like, how do you get to, you know, get to do that? Well, you know, I get to because I gave myself permission to. And I feel like I am a good steward of that. And I'm learning every day. And so I just think that I am glad to see so many white women angry. It's actually, it tickles me a little bit because I'm like, it's about time.
Where have you been?
It's about time because, you know, when we start to see, you know, and not that the negative has to be the thing that unites us, but just the fact that is a rise, it's an overall rise mm-hmm. of consciousness. And we, none of us can be asleep. We cannot pretend like we don't know. You've spoken it. So now we cannot pretend like we don't know. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't know what it's like to be a disabled artist. You know, when you ask, is your gallery accessible? And that answer yeah. was yes, because that was important to me.
Oh, yeah. That's a question I ask all the time. I feel like my middle name should be, is this space accessible? That I'm constantly asking that. And it seems like people are angry
yep.
when you ask that question. And, you know, it presents a hurdle. You know, there's already hurdles within the art world, but that's an extra one that, you know, these metaphorical walls that you have to get over within the art world. And it's like, this is an actual physical one mm-hmm. that, you know, these are yeah. actual stairs that are preventing me from entering this establishment.
I think that, which mic do I choose this time? I think that, you know, there's... We have a program at the Kansas City Art Institute called a social practice certificate. And I always think, okay, well, if you're not...
What the heck
is that? It's the socially engaged artist. And I always think to myself, if you are an artist and you aren't socially engaged, what are you doing? You know what I mean? If you're not aware, I think it's our duty as artists to be aware, to be well-read of what's going on, to be informed, and also take that in and inform others in the best way possible.
But was that a requirement
no.
in the past?
You know, no.
Just kind of surfaced.
It recently surfaced. Yeah. Like, and I think the nature of creation is isolation, too. Mm-hmm. particularly if you're painting, like writing, you can walk away from something, but isn't it hard to walk away from ceramics or because if you have color mixing, you have all these different things. Mm-hmm. So you do have to isolate yourself from the world mm-hmm. to some degree. And it's always been a privilege. Like when you go, we were talking earlier on the break about nudity in art. Mm-hmm. Whether verbal or actual nudity, and how women are asked to, well, you know, we invite you and uninvite you. And I was listening to you all, and I was like, I don't even get invited. you know what I mean? I was like, wow, at least you got invited, but you got uninvited.
Not asked to the table.
Even to not even know that these things exist, or the echo chamber that you talk about, and wanting to, you know, how do you know what you don't know? How do you know it's not, you don't know it's there. You don't even know to ask for it if you don't even know that it's there.
Yeah.
So even just those, so I think it's tricky. Because as artists, we are often in our heads and hearts and minds, and not necessarily. And art is often an escape for what is taking place as well. Mm-hmm. So it is important, I think, to have classes to say, come out of that and join. And this is how you do it as an artist. And artists are also incredibly empathetic. Sometimes I don't watch television, and I think that is what has maintained my sanity. 10 minutes of news, and I'm like, I'm done. How many times do I need to see images of children in cages? I got it the first time.
The sensationalism of reporting.
I got it the first time, and it impacted me enough that it's not going away. So why do I need to keep running that over and over? So I think we also, as artists and as women and as mothers and, you know, as keepers of the community, we have to also protect ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, we have to protect our own sanity, because everybody is coming to us for us to protect their sanity.
So
go ahead, Bernadette.
I find myself more as a wealth of inspiration, of information.
And inspiration, I would disagree
of
here.
Of information for that student. When they come, as an educator, I'm answering questions all the time. They're like, oh, I do artwork. Can you see my art? And I was like, okay, let's get you some better paper. Okay, you need to see this. Mm-hmm. So I do see myself as a conduit to educate. Oh, there's an opening. There's a show. And really pushing it out. And a lot of students come in. They love the art. Or that non-traditional student that comes in that did the life. And then they have the freedom of, like, now I want to do it for me. And taking that raw, it doesn't have to be Art Institute, it doesn't have to be this level or that level, it's the level that they're at, and allowing them to be the best that they can, providing different paper, providing here is the outlet, because a lot of people don't know, and they need the education, but sometimes they don't know what they don't know of what the education they're missing. Like, I'm just going to live off my art. I'm like, okay, well, let's make this step and that step. So my role, I feel, is I share everything I know, everything I don't know, and everything I try to find the answer for you. And sometimes I give too much, and then I have to give back.
You know, we're going to take a real quick break just for us to stretch and drink some water. And I got a song for you, Bernadette, so we'll be right back after this. I think I just made Bernadette happy. She's dancing. So, you know, I have another question for our wonderful guests today, Kat Husk, Annie Cherry, Natasha Ria Elscari, Bernadette Esperanza Torres, and Ari Fish. What challenges do you feel women face that are unique? I know maybe we've touched on some of the answers, but is there something specific that we haven't mentioned yet? So what challenges do women face that are unique?
I find that in our culture that women's bodies are seen as inherently obscene, and any art that showcases a woman's body tends to be censored, particularly on the internet, social media. I mean, I know I've had my account shut down a few times. What I try and do as an entertainer is bring political messages with a beautiful sugarcoating on them. So I draw people into the performance venue with this promise of entertainment, and I will be entertaining, but I will also try and deliver the message that is dear to my heart in that moment into my performance.
Yeah.
And I think with it comes to, you know, I think it depends upon the intersections of the marginalization as well, that, you know, that one person's experience and their you know, their difficulties within the art world will be different from another's depending upon different marginalizations. And, you know, for me personally, my biggest hurdle within the art world is just in access. And then using femme and non-binary bodies in my work, it gets censored a lot because I feature nudity.
Oh.
Go ahead, Ari.
I think, you know, I'm my own debater. You know what I mean? I don't know if you all do this, but you counter your own thoughts and you're like, no, you're wrong because of this, and you're wrong because of this. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's also...
Your own devil's advocate.
Yeah, maybe that's also a trait of being a woman. But I just had my second daughter in early March, and I had purposely booked myself 3 shows right after. Mm-hmm. And people were like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And I said, if I don't keep on sprinting, I'm going to fall. You know what I mean? I'm going to fall. And not that that's the worst thing, but I need to have that sort of, that line, that tether to the art world. And I think I know in the past I haven't felt that supported in the arts and exhibiting, because people are like, oh, you have a baby, what are you gonna do now? Oh, you're gonna stay home with a baby. No, I'm gonna,
that's the best artwork ever.
I'm taking them everywhere, and that's what I installed at the Central Library when Ona, my youngest, was maybe less than 2 weeks. You know, I strapped her on to me and I said, let's do this. Yeah. We're going forward. I have to say, though, these collaborators that I choose, and I choose them specifically because they are so good and easy to work with. And so that's my choice. You know, I don't choose to work with people that are going to be difficult or belittle me.
Yeah. And Natasha?
I think the greatest challenge is being consistent. Because you do, at least for me and the other women artists that I am around, depending on the type of writing that they do, you know, writing requires a lot of headspace and sleep deprivation in mothering. Mm-hmm. Also, the physical pull of nursing in the early years. And so if you have multiple children, you have what we call in higher ed stopouts. And those stopouts can be make or break, because if you have 3 years, which if you think about it in terms of a life of a human is really short, mm-hmm. but in your career, people can surpass you mm-hmm. in 3 years. And so it is such a tricky balance to also creating and being able to get out there, because, you know, we talk about, oh, our kids are school age, as if that now means that you just throw them on the bus and that's it. I mean, we're often mm-hmm. working mm-hmm. and doing other jobs as well and other levels of creation. And so I feel like the greatest challenge is if women are not united with other women artists. I always make sure I have a female artist community, whether they have children or not, because sometimes the women who don't have children remind us to be selfish a little bit with our time.
Yeah.
The women who have been married for a long time, they know how to navigate that space in their relationship for those of us who may be new to relationships. So I've always tried to make sure I'm surrounded by other women artists so we can kind of remind each other. And I think that women cannot be in isolation. We have to work hard to share the ups and downs of our artistry. Yeah. And women have to have a space. Every place that I've lived in, I've had my own office. Mm. Not one I shared with my ex-husband, not one that shared with my kids' toys, none of that. Yeah. It was my space. Don't touch it. Don't come in it. And I feel
get the hell out, kid.
Yes, and I feel like women artists need that, even if they don't have children, and even if they're not partnered, like even your house needs to have a dedicated space for you. You know, I have one for meditation, I have one for my office, and I have one for my bedroom. They are not all the same spaces, because those are all the parts of me that I need to feed.
Even the cat does not come into my space, because she just drives me crazy. We just have a few minutes left, so I'm going to go around, and we'll start with Natasha this time. Natasha Ria Oscari, what's coming up in your world? What's going on? Do you have any events that you want to share? And websites?
Websites, natasharia.com, NatashaRia.com, then the El Scari Harvey Art Gallery and Black Space Black Art. Those are the three new babies right now. And as far as performances, my mind just really went blank.
But that's okay, because you know what? I want you to come back and talk about the gallery.
Yes, I would love to.
So, yeah, we can certainly do that.
And we are having our show next month is called Our Future, all about young people 5 to 18 years old.
Beautiful.
So,
yeah.
Because, again, in art, like, we don't just arrive there. You know, we have to be nurtured along the way. So I like what you said, the natural nurturing or unnatural nurturing, because I said mine was unnatural. But that idea that women are nurturers, which is a gift from God, I think. But we have to get these babies early because I want to impact. And I have all girls in this show, no boys.
Wow.
So I'm excited. I'm sad, but also excited that these girls age 5 to 18 are saying yes to art.
Yeah. Terrific. Ari?
You can see more of my work at arifish.com. And then also I have some work over at the Art Space off of 43rd and Main over here for the Flat File show. It's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
You can see an array of Kansas City artists, all their flat work. It's the biennial. And then I'm also the artist in residence at the at the Woodneath Library in Liberty. It's the Mid-Continent Public Library, and they've been so patient with me and sweet, and I've been installing for like what seems like forever now. And you can kind of see how that process is unrolling. So,
terrific. You know, you might want to check your flat file because I shoved a few of my pieces in there with yours.
Okay, perfect. Yes, please. It's a collaboration.
Bernadette.
Well, you can see my work at BernadetteTorres.com of my sculptures, my wearable new ceramic necklaces. I'm also in the Charlotte Street Art Board in December, January, and February. A self-portrait from my ceramic work will be on the billboard, like Cover Girl.
Sweet.
And then also MCC Penn Valley Faculty Art Show, and it's going to be with students. So our Mentors and Mentees show is coming up in September. And I just got asked to be at Garcia Square next summer, a solo exhibit for June, July, and August.
That's Israel Garcia, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, he was a student of mine.
Yes.
And, back in the day.
And so this is it's a great opportunity. I always think teaching, I don't have time, but summertime, and it really comes full circle. 15 years later, the students are, if we all rise with the water, I teach everything I know, and we all rise.
Beautiful. I love that. Kat Husk.
Yeah. You can find more of my work at katherinehusk.weebly.com, and that's katherinehusk.weebly.com. I actually have quite a couple number of things coming up. I'm currently on exhibit at Inner Urban Art House
for their
exhibition Illuminating the Queer Experience show. I have two paintings and four photographs up over there.
And I think they have a discussion or some sort of, is it an opening tonight? They have something going on tonight.
There's like an Arts KC discussion panel this evening over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I'm at in August, I will be exhibiting at the Pride Center of Staten Island, New York.
Wow, good for you.
And then,
congratulations.
I guess at the end of this year, I'll be at Natasha's gallery as well.
Very good.
We just met today.
And Annie Cherry, what's going on?
So my next performance is with Bohemian Cult Revival, and it's a burlesque tribute to Led Zeppelin over at Valet Studios in Kansas City, Kansas, and that's June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
Also coming up at the Pearl is our next Drag Queen Storytime. We host Drag Queen Storytime every first Sunday of the month. This will actually be our first Drag King. So
love
Boris
it.
Judith will be coming to read to the kids.
Love Boris.
If you're interested in Drag Queen Storytime, Plain Sight just made a short documentary about us, and you can find it all over our Facebook page right now.
Terrific.
At the Pearl. You can find out more about me, The Pearl, and Bohemian Cult Revival at www.anniecherry.com.
Beautiful. Thank you. And, you know, I just want to say thank you so very much for allowing yourselves, time to talk with us and to sort of express your ideas, your opinions, your views. I just felt like we kind of scratched the surface, so we definitely want to have you all back for a round two, ding ding, Alpha Women Speak. So thank you so very much, and
thank
I know
you.
You'll
thank you.
You'll join me, sure, right?
Yes.
Okay, very good, terrific. And I want to remind everyone that next week, June 27th, Jen Appel will be here, Josie May, and Matt Spezia will join us. Stay tuned next for Jeff Harshbarger. Roger Wilder's filling in for him. Jazz Afternoon is up next, followed by Old G's Hangout, Groovy Grant. We love our groovy. Yay. So thank you so much for tuning in and making us a part of your afternoon. So, you know, I'm just going to say, and you all can say with me, do you know what I say at the end of the show? Oh, Lord. Okay, they're not coming back. I always say, honey, I'm coming home. So on three, one, two, three. Honey, I'm coming home. Oh, boy. Thanks so much.